Yes, you're on the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, here to talk about vampires.
When you're doing your Nosferatu impression.
No, it is Moriga. You have to feel like your Count Orlok.
I will say that I interviewed Bill Skarsgård about this movie.
Oh my God.
You can read the interview. It's now live on Prey.com. And
I love it.
He worked with an opera singer for a long time to figure out this voice, which I do think is very effective. I watched this movie and I guess I knew I'd seen that Bill Skarsgård was in some way connected to this or whatever, like in the lead up, but then watching it, I was sort of like, oh, I wonder who that is. And then it wasn't until we got to the end credits that I saw his name again, that I was like, wait a second, that was Bill Skarsgård and not some just like old German actor that they dug up out of somewhere.
Honestly.
So
I feel like it could have been what was he just standing, like he was just in costume the whole time, or was he doing voiceover? You know what I mean? Like, because a lot of it is like shadow work. Like, he's not necessarily on screen that often. When he is,
I did indeed ask him all of these questions. And so all of the shadows that are him in the movie, he does, which I think
is cute.
So I guess he did a lot of like off camera, you know, shadow work and whatnot. He was in like full prosthetics for all of the scenes that he's on camera, even if he's in shadows and stuff, because I was kind of like, this is like a lot of work. Like, were you able to eat some days? And he was like, no, actually. And because the cinematography is so gorgeous, which again, we'll get into, they did a lot of shoots to get the framing right. And he said that the days were very long and some of the shoots that they did were extremely technical and exhausting. And like,
oh my God, he needs to sue for workplace.
Well,
harassment.
He was talking about the day where they filmed the scene that's like in the ship's hall where the man gets sent down. Yeah. And I don't know if you noticed this, because I don't think I necessarily did when I watched it, but it's like he comes down the stairs, the like sailor, and sort of in the background, you can kind of see Nosferatu's shadow. But I guess everybody sort of, it's one of those things, it's sort of like in Hereditary, where it's like when you know you see it, but otherwise you don't. So he's there. And then the man walks down the ship, and then the shot sort of like pans down at his feet to the rat and then pans up, and Nosferatu's like standing there for the jump scare. But in order to get that, Bill Skarsgård, in entire, you know, full body prosthetics, including like his entire hands, like the palms of his hands, his face, disgusting. Like whole body, had to like stand there, then sprint around behind the camera and pop up on the other side. And he said like he was sweating and the sweat has nowhere to go, so there's just like pools of sweat in the costume. And yeah, like disgusting. Eventually at some point he said he thought he was going to pass out, so he had to get people to like cut open sections of the prosthetic to let it like air out in between. Wild.
That is crazy. I mean, that's interesting, because I do feel like I appreciate the dedication to his craft. Did he have trouble losing the accent? You know, we've seen so many vocal edits to voices.
Bill Skarsgård,
Austin Butler, Ariana Grande. Did this really influence him? Does he still have lingering effects of this vocal work?
I think he is less method than that and seems like a more normal person actor from He's just like, chatting with him. So, yeah.
Parade Magazine.
I was also asking him about the sex scene at the end, because I was sort of like, I was like, do you need a intimacy coordinator if it's a sex scene, but one of the people is in full body prosthetics the whole time, so like isn't really like naked or any. I was like, how does that?
That was your question.
Well, no, but I mean, that was sort of my mental question, but then I was trying to not ask it that way. So he sort of like didn't really answer it. But I was kind of like, I was like, what were those shoots like where you're like on this bed, but you're like in this full body, like whatever.
Tell me.
And then she has to act like this is like a normal sex scene, but like with this like crazy, like makeup old man person thing. You know what I mean? Like, like if someone pulled someone out of like the Jackass cast in their like old grandpa makeup and was like, hey, this you have to film a sex scene with this person now, like really takes a lot of acting ability. Maybe Lily Rose Depp should get nominated for an Oscar just because of that.
Nosferatu.
And there's a lot of other juicy tidbits in that article that I did not already give you the best pieces of. So definitely go click on that.
We'll put the link in our episode show notes. Sure. Yeah. Bill Skarsgård. So Nosferatu. I knew this was a Dracula movie. What's funny is that Rob during Christmas break was like, I want to see Nosferatu, and I was like, I don't want to, it seems scary, it's like whatever, blah blah blah. But we finally got to go in the new year, and he turns to me at the point in the movie where the where they pull out a map and they're like, you have to travel to him, he lives in this small country of slow pan Transylvania. And Rob gets to that point. He turns to me and he's like, wait, is this Dracula?
Rob, idiot.
It was so funny. He just was going on vibes alone. I think the hype was loud. Like the word of mouth on this one was, you know, it was in the air. 'Tis the season for Nosferatu and all the billboards and bus ads to finally pay off, because he was game. Even though he had no idea that this is, in fact, a Dracula remake. Well, technically a remake of an adaptation of Dracula from the 20s.
Yes. Yes. What's your experience with Dracula / vampires going into this? Had you seen the 1922 silent film? Because I actually have.
Yeah, I'm proud of you. Shocking, I didn't see that. I saw the Dracula movie, the original Dracula, with my dad. Like, loves old movies like that. So I remember watching that. Other than that, like, I honestly don't think I even read Dracula. I think I was able to sidestep that through my high school and college days. Instead, I was overwhelmed with Frankenstein readings, which I don't know if that's better or worse, but I knew very bare bones, like Dracula, as it's been sort of bastardized through different iterations. So I like knew the points. Like I remembered, okay, yeah, there's someone who's like it's like Selling Sunset in Germany or London. And he has to go and get the deal done. And then the woman ends up dead always. So I knew those points. I wasn't necessarily attached. I didn't necessarily like want to see this again because I don't like creepy stuff. Like I don't like creepy stuff. And I liked this, but it was also very creepy. It was very unsettling. It was very similar to The Witch for me, which is another one where the ambiance alone is like enough to like get in my bones and really unnerve me. Whereas something more splashy, like Heretic or, you know, I don't know what other movies you've made me watch, like Midsommar, like I can watch certain things and kind of just shake them off. But I don't know what it is about this guy, but he just makes movies that make me all spooked out.
Well,
but it was good.
As with Penny's taste in movies, your taste in movies is sort of confusing as to what will scare you and what will not. It's like you send me these texts that are like, oh, will I be afraid of this? And it's like, like with this one, I'm like, okay, it's not necessarily super gory. It's not like, it's kind of gross, yeah. but it's not like, you know, Saw. It's also yeah. not scary, I think, in like a super like jump scary kind of way. But yeah, yeah, it is very like ominous. Yeah. And then I guess also in my mind, it's like I read Dracula growing up, you know, like in high school or something, not for school purposes. I think I just wanted to. And yeah, and it is an interesting book. It's definitely like, I think it always gets lumped in with Frankenstein. I think Frankenstein as a novel has bigger fish to fry in sort of what it's saying about humanity and, you know, other bigger issues, where I think Dracula yeah. is more of just a, like, not necessarily fun, but, you know, like, like it's more for entertainment purposes than for like, what is this saying about us as people?
Well, what would I tell you if it was anti-Semitic? What would you think if I told you
that Dracula was anti-Semitic?
Yeah.
That's the
leading theory on it.
I guess not, like, I feel like there's a lot of those things
yeah.
that could be described that way. I guess I was not, me as a 16-year-old was not picking up on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it could be like, you know, the Dr. Seuss books or whatever, where they're like, oh, yeah. So-and-so has a big nose. They're actually supposed to be whatever, whatever. And I'm like, oh, okay, interesting. Or like the goblins or whatever in Harry Potter that are supposedly anti-Semitic. Yeah. Anyways, then randomly I watched the silent film version like on Halloween back after I moved to the city. It's only like an hour long. It's very short. And it's silent, so it sort of like clips through pretty quickly. So I felt like I knew the storyline enough to also not necessarily be super scared, because I was like, oh yeah, like here's the beats of this. Yeah. Like somebody gets sent to the castle, then they come back to the city. They're sort of like obsessed with some young virgin girl who they're like tormenting, and then eventually, you know, that we kill the monster. This is directed by Robert Eggers, who did The Witch and The Lighthouse and The Northman, which I think we did an episode on, if I'm remembering correctly. Did you ever watch The Northman?
I watched The Northman. I got like halfway through.
I'm like, I hated that movie. So
yeah.
I wasn't necessarily like, I really liked The Witch.
Yeah.
I think that The Lighthouse is interesting, if a bit boring. I think that The Northman is actually a really bad movie. So I wasn't necessarily super excited for this, just because I was like, okay, sort of a story I already know already. It's going to be really gorgeous, but I don't know that it's going to actually be that interesting. I feel like all of his movies are, with the exception of The Witch, because it was like a first film, and those you don't have that much say over in a lot of cases, and you don't have very many resources, so it sort of has to be short and fast, or too long. They spend too much time like on beautiful, sort of well-shot scenery and not enough on like plot, and so they're sort of long and plotting, which I do think is what happened with this movie as well. But I was, you know, pleasantly excited, and I felt like it was an interesting movie and was very gorgeous and
yeah,
you know, fine. It, like, when we get to the rankings in a couple of weeks, like, I feel like this will be like in my top half, but like in the lower half of my top half, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I was surprised by how much I liked this for not necessarily enjoying it. I think it was nice because I grew up on a lot of like historical dramas, and I feel like that's been something people have struggled with lately, where they either get like too quirky, like with Emma Period, which you liked and I did not like, or they're like over the top in some regard, whether that's with like, you know, Shakespeare in Love, or, you know, like there's a lot of slutifying of history, which all for. But I was like kind of transported back to like the era of really beautiful attention to detail sort of historical fiction, with the set design and the costumes and the language. It never felt hokey to me, and it wasn't like distracting to have them talking in these sort of fanciful Old English style words. I felt like it added to the ambiance of the film, which truly was the centerpiece and focal point of it. I think it was purely, it's about the vibes, you know, like it's like, yeah. And I respected that in this instance, because I think it is a story that allows itself to be purely about the vibe, because it is about the unsettling like nature of a vampire that's not like your cutesy little Twilight style I live forever and I love to drink blood, you know, type. Like, it's much more grotesque, but you're also like very drawn into it. And so I think that that was mirrored well in the text and in the production of it, because it really was like crazy how disgusting so much of this was, like the castle, the, you know, the inn in the middle of the forest, like obviously Count Orlok, like the insane asylum, the prison, like everything about it was just like dirty and gross and cold looking and gray. But then you're also like, you're kind of like swept up in it. And yes, Lily Rose Depp's hairline was distracting, but the costuming was just like unreal. And like, yes, you want to punch these guys in the faces, but it's so nice to hear them talk in like really thoughtful, beautiful, poetic sentences that you're kind of like swept up in. And so I was surprised by how much I respected this film in the end, because I think most Draculas, as Dracula has been adapted, it's gotten more and more like horny and like sexual and very much like distracted with the virginal sacrifice of it all and the like shadowy figure. Whether or not he's physically attractive in a traditional sense, there is like a very sexual charge to the story. And that's definitely true here. Like, there was a lot of, he's coming, he's coming, which was like, okay, we get it. Like, love a double entendre. But I also feel like it pulled back in a way that was more interesting to me, where it was less like, oh, this is just about sex, like, oh, this is just about desire. And it was more like compelling to see these characters sort of fumble around this weird energy where they're like, I hate it, but I also can't resist it.
Yeah, the vibes were very strong and very well done. Like, the production design, the cinematography, the costumes, the hair and makeup, like, all just 10 out of 10. Like, I feel like you could clip any single shot from this movie and like hang it on your wall as a poster, you know, like it's just so, well, maybe not your wall, but you know, it's just gorgeous. And yeah. And I think because it's a storyline we sort of already know, and that, yeah, there's some like adaptations to it, I guess, but not really. It does lead itself to some of the like, okay, well, now we're just operating on vibes, because like the plot isn't new. So instead we can really focus on like, okay, what's the most interesting way that we can shoot this castle? And what's like the coolest sort of outfits that we can put this Dracula in? And what, you know, what can we do with this ship scene to make it like creepy and more interesting than we would normally. So I really liked all of that. I think my biggest issue with it was just like the runtime. It's an hour and it's over 2 hours long. And I just think that like all of his movies are too long, and he spends a little too much time like sort of basking in all of his great shots. You can definitely tell that when they're editing this, it's like they put it all together and he has so many good shots that he's like, well, like, we don't want to cut that because it's so pretty. And it's like, yeah, but at a certain point you have to cut something for the pacing. And I also felt like the plot line with Emma Corrin and Aaron Taylor Johnson was also sort of like, okay, do we really need this?
I
like,
I thought
that stuff could have been chopped, and we could have, like, if this had been an hour and 45 minutes, I think it would have been like a perfect movie.
I think the, like, I agree that I think the titular, like the side characters, like the doctor talks and the other couple talks and the like, oh, is she crazy or is she horny or is she dying type thing could be trend. But I actually like the amount of energy put into these long shots and sort of the way it goes fisheye and out. And I feel like that was a character in itself, like just the ominous nature of these oppressive yet sweeping shots. Like, you shouldn't feel claustrophobic when you're looking down a mountain in the Transylvania landscape, but you do. And I think that I was fine with the indulgence on that because it did feel like its own character, or sort of like, I feel like if you'd rush through some of these set pieces or not indulge in the sort of like dirtiness and grayness of the castle or the rats on the ship, that it would have felt like, it would have drawn attention maybe to the weakness in the characters more, whereas that became its own like interesting part of the film for me.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking more of like the back half of the movie, like once everybody's sort of in London or whatever. I think all of the stuff with Nicholas Holt in Transylvania is actually like incredible. Like that so stuff good. Is so mesmerizing. And like, and it's all, at that point, there's so much anticipation because you're like, you know that we're going to get to Dracula, but it's like, when is he coming? What is he doing? The villagers are like going crazy. He's getting up to the castle. It's like, we're seeing Dracula in the shadows, but not really in person. Like, I think all of that is so well done. Also, I think intercut with that is the scene where like the real estate guy is like on the floor in his office with the pentagrams. Like all of that, everything with him was great. Like, his weird voice, that him like eating the head off the pigeon or whatever. Like, I was like more of him. He MVP, whoever that actor was, just really doing, running around naked, like doing the craziest things. Him, and then also Willem Dafoe, who I think is great in everything, but was like very fun in this, I think, as well, as the philosopher / like vampire,
the doctor hunter, psyker,
psychic. Like, what is he doing? But having the time of his life on that set, let me tell you.
No, I think I think I struggle with Nicholas Holt a lot of times, where I'm like, you can't like separate him from the performance. Like, he's not always great. And I know that's a controversial take. Like, I think there's a lot of love for him and I respect that. But I do feel like if you go through his filmography, like Warm Bodies feels the same as the character. He's hard to like disappear into a role. But I think he did here in a really compelling way, where it was like, the sweatier he got, the more nervous he got, the more I was like, oh, he is actually very talented. And I felt like this was a perfect role for him, where he's sort of this like everyman and he's kind of earnest and schoolboyish, but it's also like, come on, dude, like think about it. You're not supposed to sign something you can't read. Like, you know, like just like, there was a real frustration to him that he still like played up the kind of innocence and also ignorance. Like, I don't know. I found him very compelling. Like, I think a lot of attention is on Lily Rose Depp for good reason. She's great in this, but I do feel like Nicholas Holt was like, oh, this is a good performance. This is solid.
Nicholas Holt, I think, is such a weird actor for me, and honestly might be an interesting person to do a like birthday episode on at some point, just because he, I feel like, is either like the most boring person in an interesting movie, or is like the most interesting person in a bad movie. Like, I think other than his performance in Mad Max, like he's sort of just not. And I guess I haven't watched The Great, which I think is a reason why a lot of people are a big fan of him. But like, and that's like more of a two-hander. So I think he gets to be more interesting in a lead role. But I'm just like, and even in Mad Max, like, he's being sort of overshadowed by a bunch of other people who are also getting to do very interesting things. So yeah, I'm always just sort of like, oh, him, like, I do like him, but he's not, I think like maybe a counterpart or a counterpoint to him is someone like Jesse Plemons, who I think is similarly like a kind of journeyman actor, like stick him in anything. Like, he's got a, like, and he's not like the biggest star in these movies he's in, but somehow in every movie he's in, he is the most interesting person, even if he has a tiny role. And he is so mesmerizing in his sort of like ordinariness, where I'm like, Nicholas Holt is like just hot enough to be boring, but not hot enough to be like hot. And then like a good enough actor to sort of carry things, but not a good enough actor to stand out and things. Like, it's just, it never quite works for him. And I do think that like in this movie, if I had to sit here and name out the cast of Nosferatu, I'd probably go through at least four people before I was like, oh yeah, Nicholas Holt is also in that, even though he's like the lead.
No. I thought he was good.
Because I'm like, okay, if I had to think of people in this movie, it's like Willem Dafoe, Lily Rose Depp are like the first two people that I think of. Then I'm like, oh yeah, Bill Skarsgård is Dracula. And then I'm sort of like, wait, and who is, and then I'm like, oh, and the guy naked in the thing who I don't know, but who is interesting. Like, I'm like, Nicholas Holt is like the fifth person I'm thinking of. Like, Aaron Taylor Johnson, honestly, a similar figure to Nicholas Holt, has the Nicholas Holt role in this movie of like, couldn't, like, in 5 years, you could not get me to remember that Aaron Taylor Johnson is in this movie for $100 million. Like, would not be able to tell you. But
oh my goodness. Okay, well, I mean, a lot of people know the story of Dracula, but I am curious about where this one differs, which is you have the same setup where the original setup. You have a little bit more autonomy with the female character, with Lily Rose Depp, who plays
Ellen in this.
Ellen.
Which Ellen. Is the Mina character in the book.
Yeah, renamed. And Ellen is like, it opens in an interesting way where it's her. It's not like they had a child actress, but she is younger. Like, her room is full of girly things, like a play, like a stuffy and a dollhouse. But at the time, she's weeping and begging for someone to help her. She doesn't want to be alone. She prays to anyone who will answer. And oh girl, Orlok answers the call. It gets really, really sexual really fast. It's really creepy. Okay, if I come home, someone's like freaking just stroking out on the ground like that, I'd have questions. But the setup is that she's now married to Nicholas Holt's character, whose name is something. And they're newly married, newly happy, but she's starting to have dreams again of this like traumatic time in her life and this feeling of being cursed. And she's like, please don't go. I don't care about the money. I don't care about the like job. I just want you to stay and like love me and like let's be happy together. I feel bad about this. And in classic movie form, the bro's like, nah girl, I gotta take care of you. Men, listen to your ladies, okay? Like, if she says it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter, okay? Like, that's the lesson we should all learn from these sort of monster flicks. But whatever, he goes, makes a deal with the literal devil and sells him a house. And this allows Count Orlok to move to Germany and get with his girl he's been stalking since she was a small child. There are question marks in that, like how much he cares about the legal claim to this man's wife. So he forces them to get a divorce, which I found really... It's like, oh my gosh, is Orlok a romantic? Like, wow, so very cutesy, so very demure of him to really make sure he crossed those T's and dotted those I's, got his Transylvania dirt relocated, and is now, you know, giving his girl a choice. And I felt like that was an intentional feminist retelling of this story, and I wondered how you felt about that.
Because
in the original Dracula, it's really just like the sad little scared virgin who's being stalked, and then she dies, and her death leads to Dracula's death, but it's not necessarily presented as a choice. Whereas in this one, she's very clearly aware that like, I can destroy him, but it will mean destroying myself. And she like, quote unquote, makes that choice. And some people were really like empowered by this iteration of the female sacrifice. Did that stand out to you at all? Or
I guess I didn't really remember the end of the book that well. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's that thing where, like, when you're reading a long book, you remember the first part of it really well because you're constantly thinking about it as you're reading on. But then sort of once you read the end, you don't really think about the end very much. So I feel like the ends of books I always have fuzzier memories of than the beginnings of them for whatever reason. Where I feel like with movies, it's sort of like the opposite where the ending is the thing that you're thinking of when you're done with the movie. So it like sticks in your mind more. I mean, I do think that you can't really have a version of this in 2024 where the woman just sort of like gets killed by the man. And then they're like, well, okay. Like, I think that you have to do something to sort of make it a little bit more feminist rather than like, we're just going to have her as bait. So I guess that makes sense. I also feel like in the interview with Bill Skarsgård, he said that there's been over 100 different versions of this done, like between movies and TV shows and around the world and in different international iterations. So I am kind of like, we've seen so many of these, like obviously something has to be like different and so I kind of wonder if that was taken, like if he came up with that version for this or if that is taken from a different version of Dracula that I just haven't seen or don't remember or whatnot. But yeah, I mean, I thought that the ending worked and that the sort of like the sex scene and when he realizes that it's daylight and sort of gets burnt out, like everything worked for me for the most part in this. I thought I didn't have too many qualms other than just like sort of it, I felt it got a little arduous in the second half.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I do think it's interesting that it's another one of those stories written by a dude where it's like the women, if you just listen to the women, you'd be better off. But I found that interesting with both the parallel between Ellen and her best friend and sort of like how they react to these situations and sort of the denial / begging that's going on. And so they became interesting characters, but it was fascinating how much time was still spent on the dudes, which it's weird to say in a movie where they went out of their way to like give more to the women. And like Lily Rose Depp is definitely the star of this film. Like she has the most screen time. She is the like, you know, impetus for the film. She's doing a great performance. And I think her relationship with Orlok is interesting and sort of this retelling of her childhood where she's always been sort of mystically inclined and how that was a gift, but ultimately her downfall. But I did find it was kind of like, I felt myself curious about the third act when it's like, Nicholas Holt is back. Count Orlok is in town. There's a plague brewing. And you finally get this showdown between Ellen and the rich BFF who doesn't want her there anymore because she's like messing with his idea of like the idyllic life. And you also get a lot of shots and stories about like, oh, it's female hysteria. Like we have to treat it. They have too much blood in the womb. Like we have to let the blood out. And like you have this pseudoscience that was real at the time of believing women with any emotion or feeling or depression or reactionary speaking out of turn meant they were mentally ill and needed to be tied to beds and whatnot. But it was kind of like I wanted them to kind of play with that more, not necessarily because they had so much time. Like I think what I'm saying is I could have done without so many monologues from Willem Dafoe and Aaron Taylor Johnson or whatever and had more of like the wife being like, huh, maybe we shouldn't tie this woman to her bed. Like what's going on here? Like what does this so really mean? But instead, her death is kind of like pretty sad and pointless and really disturbing. And I didn't like it that much. And I feel like she could have been given more to do along with Lily Rose Depp. Also the ending where he like has sex with her corpse. I was just like, get over yourself, dude. Like, I don't like you.
I think that the problem with the... It's sort of like a fundamental problem with the book, I guess the source material, is like the waiting element of it.
Yeah.
Where basically these women are just sort of sitting in town while the men, like, waiting for Dracula to arrive. It's like, it's the men who go and, like, have the plan to get him. It's the men who go and visit the castle. It's the men who are with him while he's coming. But, you know, it's like, it's all... the women sort of really have nothing to, like, you're inventing things for them to do prior to Dracula getting back, so sure, they can sort of have visions or whatever, but it's not like that they're really involved in the action. And then even once Dracula's in town, it's a lot of sort of like sitting and waiting. Will he show up? Won't he show up? What will he do when he gets here? Like, there's not a lot of agency for any of them. And I feel like, I'm sure that there's been versions of this where it's more like the women of the vampire hunter kind of things, but then that's a very different story because, you know, like, that's just not what the original, like, I think that there's some things, you know, like certain Shakespeare plays where you can kind of like twist them to make, to give the woman more action or to sort of be like, see, the woman was right all along. Where in this, I kind of like, I think there's only so much you can do to sort of like spruce up those characters who are basically just sitting around the entire movie. Yeah.
And that's like the tragedy of these stories so often, is like the women know better, but they are the first victims. Like, it's like,
yeah.
And I think that's interesting, but I ultimately just found myself irritated by Aaron Taylor Johnson and and the doctor and the sidekick and blah 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 blah, you know.
Well, it's it's like, could we maybe have like gender swapped one of those roles to somebody who's a woman? And then also, yeah, we didn't, I think that they for the most part come across as like, not even if they don't know what they're doing, like, meaning well. And so you also don't have the commentary as strongly of like, look at these men like blundering around, and now this woman sort of has to sacrifice herself to clean up for their mess, which I think could have been
through for me at least, because honestly, one of my favorite scenes in the final act is Lily Rose Depp confronting Nicholas Holt and being like, I told you not to go, like, what are you going to do now? Like, you wanted this. You said it was for me, but I don't care about the wealth. And look, now it didn't even pay off. Like, you literally are possessed. You have no job. Your boss turned out to be a total freak. Like, congrats to you. You got everything you wanted, ? And then she's like, definitely, like, she kind of slaps him with like the one thing she has power over. It's like, well, you're not as good in bed as freaking Count Orlok. And that's the thing where he's like, no, my manhood has been questioned. And so I do like elements of that was introduced in this script, where it felt like authentic to the time and didn't feel too like over the top, even though this is a monster movie, where it was like interesting commentary being had. I just, I wish maybe, like, I don't need a gender swapped, like, I don't need Willem Dafoe to be a woman or like a transgender doctor. Like, I don't necessarily care about that, but I do feel like they had enough interesting pieces at play here with the class disparity and the denial versus like begging between the women, that I feel like that would have been interesting to flesh out a little bit more than I needed some sort of speech about the occult and like how to defeat Dracula at this point, you know.
Yeah, but I do love
you do Willem love Willem, Dafoe. You know, Willem apologist, and I respect
I mean,
that.
I could watch Willem truly do anything in any movie. Like, he's such a good actor, and he's such an interesting choice. It's like, yeah, give him a monologue whenever you want. Yes.
You know what? Nicholas Let's Holt get rid of and, the other doctor. We can get rid of the other
The other doctor and Aaron Taylor Johnson, I think, can both have their parts reduced by a large capacity.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I do like, there were little elements where I was like, oh, this will be fun. Like the fact that he is the one who owns the shipyard and then the plague-ridden ship comes in. Like, I feel like he should have been more panicked about like his, him losing all his money and stuff. Cause I feel like that was interesting. Like I was like, I perked up at that point where I was like, oh, he's the ship. He's the shipyard owner, like blah. But it's all just kind of like, you know, it fades away very quickly once Count Orlok is there making his deal with his bride, where she's like, you have 3 nights and I will ruin every single one of them until you let me come to your bed willingly. And I was like, I think him and Heretic need to sit down and like really discuss what they mean by free choice, because there's a certain point where I don't think it's a choice anymore. Man, am I right?
This is like a completely different side topic, but can we just talk about Lily Rose Depp sort of as a figure for a half second? Because I do sort of find her like a bizarre kind of Hollywood entity in a lot of
Nepo
ways.
Baby.
Well, like a Nepo baby, but a Nepo baby like of a canceled person?
Yeah. And I mean, barely, yeah.
Well, yes, but like, so I am always kind of like, should I be
like, what's
for
your
you?
Moral?
Am I holding this against you? Yeah, it's like, how much are you hanging out with Johnny Depp versus like, because I feel like that they don't get spotted together very often, but then I'm also kind of like, is that like her management team being like, you actually guys can't be photographed together anymore? Like, this is like, that's going to be a no. Like, was he at the premiere or anything for this? I feel like I didn't see any pictures of that. But then
I don't know about that. I know that she talked a little bit about him and like how he watched the movie or like his reaction to it. Like I don't really follow. I think I mean, when I left, I was like, oh, is she like, because I couldn't remember. I was confusing her with Brad Pitt's children on whether or not they had a relationship with their father, and Brad Pitt's children do not. And she does. So, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's like, that's where I come down to celebrities in general. Is like, I've been better at just being like, yeah, these people aren't like great and I'll enjoy their art or I won't. But she hasn't done anything specific at this point where I'm like, no, she's trash too. And I think it's hard because,
she's a lesbian? Did you know that? I'm looking at her Wikipedia page, just found that out. Or I guess bisexual. She dated Timothée Chalamet as well.
Yeah. She's a lesbian.
She's a lesbian?
It's like that Vine where it's like, and they were roommates. Like, that's...
Look, I'm sorry. This is breaking news
breaking
for me.
Breaking news. Queer icon. Lily Rose
Depp.
You
know
how do you
Lily
feel
Rose
about that,
Depp?
Matt?
Well, I mean, I'm
is that a pro? Is that a con? Like, is that enough to outweigh
my recent stance on bisexual people is the quote, I do believe that bisexual people exist, but I'm growing a little weary of hearing from them. I support that. But also it's like, she had the idol.
Yeah.
Which crashed and burned. I feel like other than that, I don't know what else she has been in.
I don't think she's been in much. Wasn't that her breakout?
Well, I guess she was in that movie, The King, the Timothée Chalamet bowl cut movie, which is how they met.
Very cute.
She was also in some sort of Natalie Portman movie called Planetarium that I never heard about. So she's been in stuff for a bit, but I am just sort of fascinated by her as a figure and kind of like what if I should be a fan or not a fan. And not that I really have any opinions on her that much, but yeah. I don't know.
Matt's trying to decide if he should delete his Lily Rose Depp fan page or stick to it. So we'll have to have a poll in our stories.
Well, okay, and then also just to circle back, so is the Jewish part that the Dracula's like supposedly like an evil Jewish person who's trying to like suck blood out of society?
Well, yeah, it's the anti-Semitism of this sort of otherworldly, wealthy for no reason, like nobody likes you. Like obviously someone has written this down better than I am echoing it now, but the anti-Semitism tropes come from this idea of, yeah, him coming, bringing filth, like that sort of thing. Like there's a lot of, I mean, that was a lot of imagery in Germany ahead of World War II as well, is like the bloodsuckers, and they'll come for your children, they'll come for your wives, like type of language. So I think, I don't know if anyone's traced that back to like an intentional sort of, you know, choice on the original author's part, but I think that has been sort of a reading of it since its iteration of sort of this, at the very least, anti-immigrant, like sort of don't trust the other, those others types, sort of thing. And then the visuals for him have always been like very, yeah, large noses and money like hungry and kind of the long claws and sort of stuff like that.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
The intriguing. More you know.
This one dialed it back intentionally, I think, was an interview I saw somewhere, but I don't remember.
Yes, he does have unlike a mustache, Maestro.
Though. Yeah.
Do Jewish people have mustaches? Is that also a thing?
No, I just mean they made choices on his, you know,
oh yes,
look,
he does have a mustache.
They insisted he have the Transylvanian mustachio, even as his back oozes and his penis shrivels.
Yes, well, I did see the Instagram post that they gave Nicholas Holt the prosthetic penis as a parting gift. So
yeah.
Actually, if you look under your chair right now, oh Shelby, God. I got you something.
Oh man, yeah, the very creepy, very gross little Orlok. Very
Orlok.
Bleh, his like bloody pustule. It was a disgusting design, and they did a good job of it, I guess. So, congrats to all involved. Do you think this will make a showing at the Oscars?
I think this has a very good shot at getting into some of the craft categories, definitely. Sort of beyond that, I don't know. Like, I don't think it will get in for any acting, and I feel like it's not, like, been hyped sort of enough to get, like, directing or picture or something. I guess maybe it could get screenplay, but I also kind of feel like this is one of those things where it's been done so many times and this isn't that different that I think it would be unlikely that they would give it that. But I could definitely see like cinematography, production design, costume design, like all of that kind of stuff is very possible. So
yeah, well, we watched it and we talked about it as requested. Yes. Who knows what's coming next, but that's the joy of these dumpy-wary months.
Well, it looks like there's only one big movie coming out this weekend, so that's what we're going to have to see, and it's Den of Thieves 2, no. Pantera. Sorry, we're seeing the Gerard Butler movie, a favorite. No, I do want to slot in that I do want to watch the SZA Kiki Palmer comedy when that comes out. Like that's a lock for me.
We have to do our year preview, so maybe we could do that this week.
Oh, yeah, let's do that this week because yes, we have nothing else going on. Yeah. Really. So,
yeah, okay, perfect. Then I can talk about the Kirsten Stewart falling in love with a satellite movie that I'm excited about.
Yes, yes. Very... And we can talk about Wicked Part 2. So there's that also to discuss. Lots of great movies. Okay, yes. I can't wait to go through here and pick out things that I think are going to be bad, which is many. And I can talk about my favorite movie of this year already, which is On Becoming a Guinea Fowl, which I saw last year and is coming out this year. And I think that you will be obsessed with, hopefully.
Very cute. Can't wait.
Not really cute, but, you know, good.
Can't wait to hear your take on it.
Nonetheless. And, okay, well, great. I actually have to run because I have to visit a young virgin who I am going to... kill her family or her whatever. Yeah,
as one does.
As one
does. I would love for you to be the voice of Dracula. You're like, hi.
Hey, girl. Just here. So, real quick, if you have a minute, I don't like want to take up too much of your time, but funny thing, I actually would love some of your blood if you don't mind giving it to me. Yeah. I'm like, that's actually a version of Dracula that we haven't seen yet that I think would be great.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Me playing Dracula, you playing...
We didn't even talk about Renfield crossover. Nicholas Hoult bouncing around these Dracula iterations. So we look forward to his version of Count Dracula in the coming years.
Yeah, probably next year. Yeah. At the speed with which he's pumping these out.
I need another
Jane Austen adaptation. That's actually what we need. I feel like it's been a year since we've had one, and
I think Ariana Grande was soft launching her pitch to be Emma in that outfit she wore to the Golden Globes. She's like, guys, I can do it. So
no, we've had too many Emmas recently, and also Emma is my favorite.
Well, that's Jane what Austen she's going character. For. She's
I
definitely
feel like you're
Emma.
More of an Elizabeth. Than an Emma. No, I'm like, I'm me? More Emma and you're more. Yes.
Yeah, probably, I guess. Yeah. Because I'm kind I'm of like rolling my like, eyes at everyone else.
Yeah, I feel like you have big like Pride and Prejudice energy. And yeah. I'm like, I'm going to solve all these people's problems. Like, I'm popular and cool. And then it's like, no, you made everything worse. Like,
really problematic of you. And you should change your behavior. That is very much.
I have a hot cousin that I'm going to get involved with. No, not really. Hopefully. Okay, well, great, perfect. We'll have to scour the 2025 calendar, see if there's a secret Jane Austen project that we're unaware of.
Yeah, for sure.
But like a la Fire Island. But this was great. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back next week. Bye.